Welcome, everyone, to Wednesday evening service at Sunrise Ranch. We've decided to have a courageous dialogue around spirituality. Are you up for that? I'm going to present some ideas, and then we'll pass the mic and just see where we go. I would say in some way, we can go wherever we want to go. Like there's no out of limits, except for this. Some kind of respect for others and the ideas and thoughts of others. And some kind of kindness about the way we deal with other people's belief and faith and practice. So kind of some kind of respect and kindness I would ask for. And then I'd also say that just erratic dialogue, throwing out wild things, while there may be nothing wrong with it, doesn't necessarily go anyplace. So I would ask for what? Intelligence, the best we can come up with it. You know, just that we strive for insight that might be meaningful to us personally and possibly meaningful to others. And we just all be open to some insight in the whole thing. For ourselves, and then to share with others. So those are my thoughts about kind of guidelines on how we work. Anything else come to mind in that department?
It's also to be listening so that we're not holding on to something we really want to say and then throwing it in just because we finally get the mic. So stay listening in the flow of the conversation and also not challenging or fixing what the person may have just said, so that something is presented that you feel you'd like to address, maybe give some space for your own holding of it before you would speak to it.
Yeah, let's not be challenging each other, but I think if we're going to play here, we have to be willing to allow the thoughts that we have to be played with by others a little bit. Okay, so I'm going to share some thoughts to get this going. For our collective consideration. So the first thought is that there is a reality. And whatever we might think about that reality, for our minds to have a way to relate to it and conceive of it. But it's very likely that whatever we think about it, the reality that we're thinking of is far larger than the thought that we think about it. And in fact, if you take a look at the thoughts you think about spiritual things, to the degree you do, they're most often couched in very physical terms. So if you look at religion and spirituality, whether it's Father God or whether it's Garden of Eden or the serpent, whatever it is you think of, it's generally speaking, a physical thing. Like the thought we have is we're trying to conceive of something that isn't physical, but in a physical way. And I'm just asking for suggesting for us that whatever we think about what is true, it's not the thing that actually is true. It's a thought about it that may be more or less accurate than another thought. Anyway, that brings a little humility about our thinking in the whole thing. So I want to suggest that we take on some really big ideas. One word that conveys a big idea is heaven. Another big word is God. We could probably spend our evening believe about what those words have been used to represent. And that could be fun. But I'm suggesting almost like that we all ante up by saying, yeah, there's a lot that we all don't believe about what those words mean. And I'm pretty sure that's kind of universal. Is there something true that the words might point to? Or what is true about those words? The word I would like to introduce here is word. So biblically, it's said in the book of John, it goes something like this. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word was with God. And all things were created by the Word. So what is that picture being painted? It's a picture of vibration expressing itself out of the source of reality, expressing itself from there and then rippling out into the manifest world and creating the manifest world. And there's also an implication by the very use of the word that our words have some relevance to that vibration. Or even more broadly, we have the ability to tune into the invisible source of creation, and then to allow the ripple of the vibration of that's constantly emerging to express itself through us as a human being, consciously, intelligently, in tune with the unfolding reality of creation, and thereby to become a creator, or you might even say to be the creator. Back to the word God. Even in the Judeo-Christian tradition, there's a lot of God there, a lot of plurality of God. I don't want to just lean on Judeo-Christian tradition. So if you think of Greek tradition, right? In the Greek mythology, of course, to them it wasn't a mythology, it was just the way it was. But in what we called Greek mythology, there was a pantheon of gods. You know, Zeus, and there was Hera, and there was Apollo, and on it went. So these are universal ideas. The word nirvana correlates somewhat with the word heaven. Then there's, you know, God the Father, and then you get the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. So you got that sounds like a plurality to me. It's not just one God. And then, you know, what do you do with the archangels? They come in there someplace. Gabriel, you know, you got the archangels. And then what do you do with Mother Mary? She's like up there someplace. And so you have the whole introduction of, well, yeah, there's God the Father, but there's a feminine reality to the Creator. Wherever you look, there's the feminine face of the Creator. My interest in all these things is, so what's actually true? And if the word heaven is relevant, well, if it ever is going to be true, it's true now. It's simply the place, the invisible place of the origin of things. Because where we live, it seems pretty clear heaven is where God lives, or gods live. So the reality of being that's before it's incarnate lives in a quantum reality or quantum field. And I want to throw that into our midst. A fellow, Otto Scharmer, wrote something really brilliant. It was about how we've tended to think of science as being an experiment of an observation of somebody else, of something happening outside ourselves. But he was pointing out the fact that there's scientific observation, which is from firsthand experience of things. So what is provable to me by firsthand experience? The part that's provable to me is that when my consciousness tunes in, I feel into the reality of that. I can attune to it and allow the vibration of it, the word, in my life. Do that, something remarkable happens. Because what seemed like a belief and was invisible and seemingly unknowable now has become very real because it's reverberating all through my heart and mind and finding expression through me in the living of my life. And then that starts to get really real. So it said that God is love. The central essence of God is love. So you could say that's a belief, that in the invisible field of planet Earth here, in the world that we live in that invisible field, the most central core essence of it, and therefore the most, the central core essence of God is love. When I attune to that and I give it expression, it goes beyond some kind of belief. It's like, when I become a loving person, it's like, wow, that just got really real. Like, I really do love these people. I just really do love this world. I just love to be alive and to be myself and to be of service. It just got really real. And so to me, the way I think of that is that I've tapped into reality and it got real because I allowed that invisible reality to reverberate through me. That's not nothing. That is powerful. If that's a nothing, it's a pretty powerful nothing. That's where it goes for me. If that's nothing, it's a pretty powerful nothing. And it changes my life when I live in relationship to it. Somehow spiritual perception and heart experience come into this, because tuning in, that's what happens. There's a resonance, there's a heart experience, there's a spiritual perception of something that just gets very real and paints pictures on my mind. And I have to remember that it isn't what those pictures are, but there's something there that I've tuned into. That's how it is for me. As much as possible, just tune in and be daring enough to tune in, then speak about what gets real for us when we tune in. What gets real? Whoever would like to go next.
There is a sense that I want to go back to that place. Somehow there's a placeness about it. And why did it become a place that we have to be really good and then go there when we die? Because quite often we're not there. And quite often it feels like we cannot get there from here in this place. And so it must be that we can only get there when we die. The damage that's been done by thinking of it as a place and a place that's unattainable to us, it's great damage that's been done, because we feel like all of the things about heaven, we can live in it. We have a lot of power around this thing. The disempowering messages that we've received about it have had many people completely dismiss it as a word. When you throw out the word, you know, we've lost something. Yet, it's a place. I want to go back there. You know, but at the same time, it's so many other things. Like I said, we create it.
In that, I'm thinking of the word haven as being like the safe place we can always go to check in. Think about a place, my heart and my spirit goes to that place. So if I think about like a vibrational place, I know, like, when I call it sourcing with you know, source, when I'm touching into that heaven place and pulling in from my experience, it's like you go up into this space and suddenly meet friends that are hanging out in this kind of like top shelf, like tucked away place. And so, David, as you were talking about like the idea of the gods being at the top of a mountain, to me that feels like a vibrational place. When you're able to go up and, like, even if you don't always stay there, if that's your check-in place, that becomes your home and you live out of that heaven.
For me, that placeness, the way I've always seen it, a vibrational state of existence, because it's something you can exist in. Also, you can go in and out of it without ever having to move your body, the place that you're in. I believe it has a lot to do with comparison, because it's an infinite scale of creation and reality. One person's experience could be hellish for another, depending on in which direction we're facing. Anything that comes, I believe, to a greater point of focus and coordination from the patterns of love is more and more and more and more heavenly. And anything that exists within and expresses from patterns of fear and separation becomes more and more hellish. And so we can shift states being either in that heavenly space, but I don't believe there is a place of heaven. There is simply an infinite potential.
To think about these things, we still speak of the heavens, clouds in the heavens. In some languages, I was thinking of French, there is only the one word. Ciel means heaven or it means sky. It is a place. And the what you were saying, Uma, about it being a place that we can't get to, this has been the case with the sky. Basically, we're two-dimensional people. We two-dimensional creatures. We walk around on a flat two-dimensional space. So it was a very good metaphor for this place, this imaginary place that no one can get to.
I think that it looks like this, but really it looks like this. And I'm limiting myself because I'm only expecting it to come through this channel here. As soon as I start to open up to possibilities, is it a doorway in? Is showing me where I can be more, where can I shine God's light into this situation? How can I be that presence here?
There was a TV show called What If God Were One of Us? And it was a story of a high school girl. And each week she would have these strange encounters. And in the end, she would realize that that person was God. The thing is, if I remember correctly, there was never a time when she realized that she was God too. And so that idea, it seems we begin to realize that heaven isn't up there or out there, but it's in here. And that all of those wonderful things we believe in have always started within. And it's a matter of finding our own worthiness to allow ourselves to know that it has always been within, because God is in us already.
I'm on that line too of like, it's an experience inside of myself. When I move into that space of heaven, it's for me, and maybe it really is different for everybody. Like, I don't have this experience coming from above. When it happens for me, it comes like this, and it like opens up. And then it's not something I'm stepping into, moving into. It's something that's coming from me, from within me. And I think what limits me from going there is the identification with the thoughts and identification with the body, because those are what limit us into this like little limited human experience space. But when we can, you know, move beyond that and like go deeper to touch that and experience that, it's like infinite. The realms and the depth and the possibility that exists inside of us.
Religion to me always started out with people who, they always had this like, you had to do this, you have to do that. Otherwise, you're not part of this religion. You're not going to go to heaven. You're in hell. You're this. And so many religions started out like that and have been like that, and some even are like that today. Well, if you don't follow and believe exactly how they believe and act how you should, then who cares? You're not going to this mystical, amazing place where, you know, everything is possible and everything happens. It's a very rule-strict place. And then wars and stuff about religion, like people twisted other people's religions and stories because they didn't fit with those. They changed stories because they wanted to make it more like their own. And, you know, to not anger the people, they, you know, kept some parts of it, but, you know, completely destroyed others or changed gods to make it more of their own. And that's how Hades became this really evil character, is because that's how the Christians saw him. He had to be this evil guy. Well, death is evil and scary, and unless you, you know, follow our rules, you know, he's going to punish you. Before, he was just this guy who took care of people who were dead. And that's all he was. But because, you know, that's not how they thought it should be, they changed him into some evil character. And they do that a lot with stuff. They think one thing is bad, and then they create an idea that you have to isolate it and keep it out. You can't go near it. If you go near it, you can't go to heaven. You can't do anything. It's completely out. And you can't accept any part of it. They don't listen. You can't talk. You can't speak. You can't listen. You can't even think about it. That type of mindset has been spread through so many different religions throughout the years. And it's starting to become more open now with churches and things like this and other places I've been. And so everything has become more open, but that's the type of thing I've seen going through different religions in the past. And I want to break away from that type of mentality, that unless you follow this strict guideline and unless you follow this type of mentality, then you can't do anything. Then nothing is possible. You close yourself off and it's impossible to do anything in your future. You just tarnished everything. And then everything is, you live so you can die and then go to this magical place. You live your life on these strict rules and follow these strict guidelines and do this every single day, every single year for the rest of your life, so that you have a chance to go to this place that you don't even know if it's real, because that's what they told you. You just believe it. That's the only thing you can do. That's the only thing you were taught to do. So
quick, I think that heaven is a feeling of ecstasy, like probably a perpetual feeling of ecstasy, and that's why it seems so unattainable, because we have our feeling and human feeling realm is just roller coaster, right? But I can't speak for every human on the planet, because I don't know if every human gets to experience ecstasy in their life. But I suspect a baby getting to eat, candy or something of that nature, even that sounds pretty ecstatic, you know. So heaven to me is a feeling. It's not a place of some sorts. It's just a feeling. And if you can continue to perpetuate that feeling, then you can stay in a perpetual state of heaven.
The process of learning how to experience heaven is a God version of myself. You visualize yourself as that God being that's always there.
I just had a couple short things to connect also some other pieces that flew around here. Back to like the original thing of the Word was God and the Word was with God. Well, if God is love and Logos, or Word is Logos, you know, like Christ, then the Word was with love. And that's how we were creating, with love. And I feel like the story of like Adam and Eve kind of like shifts that into like, now they're not creating with love because they were shaming themselves because they found the, you know, reality of the double-edged sword. And another thing that I wanted to talk about was heaven. Like for me, heaven could possibly be an ever-evolving thing, not just like in the like subconscious realm where like we connect all to the heaven, and then we have our personal heavens, you know, because everybody's like has their own like way that they connect with that. But for me, I never like feel like I can step into the same heaven twice, like kind of like you can never step into the same river twice, because it's always like a new experience of connecting to this, you know, completely magical new heaven. So I just thought, that was kind of interesting. And then relating back to like the other thing of like, why would we think that dying got you to heaven? The thing that I thought of was, well, maybe dying means the death of the ego, which if I think about that, in that case, then you wouldn't have something to differentiate experience with without like the discerning eye of the ego. So perhaps when you do die, it is like that ecstasy state, just like propelled into not, you know, duality anymore, but into like legit oneness. So I think that with human symbology, we can touch into like a lot of different concepts, like, yeah, the personification of like gods, or like Plato's images, or like the shadows on the walls, where we have these concepts of things. But I think that perhaps like heaven and God are like, yeah, beyond the human experience. And that's why it's so hard to like box it up like for our human minds, because it transcends that. And is something like it's the mystery. It's the mystery and the invitation to the mystery in our human life, ranging in all the spectrum of experience here.
So I like to believe it's like everything is energy, like condensed to a certain vibration, your chakras and everything. Energy is love. And I feel like it flows through your heart, and you can create and spread your love, whatever, you know, different people resonate with different things, whether it's playing guitar or singing or working in the garden. And they show love into the world in their own unique way. And I believe, you know, the mind can clutter that, and the emotions and everything, and it's good to find balance. Finding your way to create is a good way to express that into the world and be your own sovereign God being, and finding, you know, your path of love. And, you know, I feel like the darkness can help show you what you don't want. You know, I feel like it's there to kind of teach you lessons. And for me, one of the biggest lessons I've learned is to find what makes me happy and brings me love, and to resonate with that vibration.
Wow. This is a wonderful conversation. And the conversations and studies and ideas and remembering in FSC since March has been building and building and building. And this past week, the piece on selfhood, I just feel ties really into what you've invited us to talk about. And for me, it's sort of kind of shifted my perspective in a way, because I was always looking at this human being a vessel to allow this source to flow through me and express through me. Whoa, wait a minute. I am source. What if I see myself as source, allowing the human to flow through me? And I've been really playing with that. And it's like, that changes a lot for me, you know, because I bounced back and forth through my life of, I went completely the whole spiritual way, you know, the pendulum swings, and then I forgot my humanness. And then I went totally into my humanness. And now I was coming to this place of, oh, I can be a vessel to let source express through me. No, wait, I am heaven. I am heaven. I am source.
I was actually thinking about this. We have a hymn. We have a hymnal book. It's in the dome. You could just look at it sometimes. And one of the hymns was, I think Martin wrote the words, and it's, "The mystery of God is finished on earth." And I think that says it all. I mean, it's that God doesn't have to be a mystery, because all you have to do is look right across from you and you'll see God right there. And I think that's what I love the most about the emissaries. It's not some pie in the sky spiritual illusion. It's actually very, very real. And we have an opportunity as a community to really let the mystery of God be finished on earth, because we're here, we're rubbing shoulders, we're having conversations, and we're doing things together. And the mystery is over, because God is present, because we're present.
My thought patterns have been changing as we go around the room. But I know what heaven is, I believe from what I've heard. I think what I was thinking about through this whole thing is about is to manifest in a creative way.
For one moment, just come straight to the heart. In that deep core of the unseen place of the heart, just let a tiny bit of gratitude just fall right in. It is said that one who is grateful will always have more things to be grateful for.
I just wanted to say thank you for introducing this in a way that our minds did not get locked together.